Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County with some special pre-election coverage. Election Day is this Tuesday, so please remember to vote. Last election in East County, at least one school board race was decided by a single vote. Now, if you're not registered, you can still go to the Registrar of Voters as late as Election Day and get registered to cast a ballot. You can get their address at directions at sdvote.com. On today's show, later we'll be interviewing all three candidates running for an open seat on the Santee City Council in District 3. This is an important race that could affect the balance of power in the city. The candidates are Zach Giannino, Laura Koval, and Linda Maracal, in a race where development issues and the city's budget deficit are key. But first, we have some late-breaking news on several other East County races and a reminder of some key issues at stake across our region. In El Cajon, Councilman Gary Kendrick has raised more than twice as much money as his opponent, Councilman Ben Colosio. Colosio, tainted by scandals as he awaits trial on accusations of sexual harassment and defamation, has entirely self-funded his campaign. There are no other donors reported, and his website lists zero endorsements. It's unclear how Colosio was able to make a contribution of over $10,000 to his campaign, however, since he told a judge that he's indigent. Colosio has settled a lawsuit filed against him by the city over misuse of El Cajon resources, including repeatedly publishing the city's seal on his campaign materials, which is illegal under California law. Robert Weaver has dropped out of the El Cajon mayoral race, leaving two Republicans, incumbent Mayor Bill Wells and challenger Joel Scalziti, who currently serves on the Helix Water Board. Both claim to be fiscal conservatives, though Scalziti has a long record of tax liens filed against him by the state, county, and, yes, the city of El Cajon that he aspires to represent. Out in Santee, Councilman Rob McNellis leads all Santee candidates in fundraising with over $23,000 raised to date. He's running in District 1. His opponent, Evelyn Andrade Hemsfield, has raised over $11,000, but she has spent more than McNellis to date. Major funders of McNellis, a mortgage banking professional, include developers and the San Diego Deputy Sheriff's Association. Now in La Mesa, the city council campaign has taken a dark turn with attack mailers targeting two Democrats challenging two incumbent Republicans. Two of those pieces were sent by a PAC called Public Safety Advocacy, claiming that Dr. Akilah Weber, a mother and a physician at Children's Hospital, supports policies that would put public safety at risk and let sexual predators out of jail early. Weber says all the claims in the flyer are false and that this is unacceptable behavior. Another mailer targets Dave Myers, claiming he has undemocratic values, even though Myers is endorsed by the Democratic Party. The flyer also cites Myers' stance on gun issues and a minor campaign finance violation. Council members Bill Baber and Guy McWhirter, the Republicans, both deny any knowledge of the PAC-funded mailer. The Democratic Party, meanwhile, posted a hit piece of its own on Facebook targeting Baber as a political operative for negative mailers in a Solana Beach campaign for which Baber serves as treasurer. Baber says he can't control the free speech rights of his client. Myers, meanwhile, is banking on shoe leather to lead him to victory. He says he's walked to 8,200 doors in La Mesa so far. Quite a feat, considering he has a fractured foot. McWhirter, meanwhile, has found an alternative to walking precincts. He's going door-to-door on an electric scooter. La Mesa's Proposition V, which would add an excise tax to marijuana dispensaries, appears headed for passage, based on a new poll that shows 42% in favor, 26% opposed, and 32% undecided. La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis is running unopposed. Despite his decision to leave the Republican Party and become a no-party-affiliated voter, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans fielded an opponent to run against Arapostathis, a popular teacher who also runs a junior theater program when he's not running the city. Out in Lemon Grove, City Council candidate Teresa Rosiak, a Republican, says if elected, she won't accept the salary in order to do her part to avoid making the budget deficit worse. That's a largely symbolic gesture, since Lemon Grove council members earn only $8,460 a year, a drop in the bucket of its looming deficit. Opponents of Congressman Duncan Hunter have found a creative way to get their message out. Underneath Hunter's campaign signs, opponents have added one of their own. It reads, "Indicted. Google it." A Google search turns up news articles about Hunter's felony indictments on federal charges of stealing $250,000 in campaign donations for use on a lavish personal lifestyle. Hunter has been stripped of his committee assignments, but if he's convicted and sent to prison, a Union Tribune article reveals it's possible that he might not be required to step down, even though he'd be unable to serve his constituents. The future of the district's representation may come down to which party has control of Congress after Tuesday's election. Nationwide, Democrats are heavily favored in most polls to take back control of the House, but not the Senate. Whether the blue wave will wash into East County or not remains to be seen. Hunter's opponent, Democrat Amar Campanajar, has out-fundraised Hunter and is now within 3 percentage points of winning, based on a poll last week by KGTV and the Union Tribune newspaper. Campanajar's unconventional campaign tactics include making a music video featuring the candidate himself singing a patriotic ballad as he encourages voters to put country over party, and a new ice cream flavor introduced by Ben and Jerry named in the candidate's honor. The race, it appears, will be all about turnout. In the San Miguel Fire District, many voters are still surprised to learn that William Keel on their ballot is not the incumbent board member, but his much younger son. At stake is the future of the district, since the board voted to cancel its contract with CAL FIRE and regain its independence by a slim one-vote margin, with Keel Sr. opposed. Grossmont Union High School District Trustee Robert Woods, the executive director of a biblical institute affiliated with Shadow Mountain Church, is facing a challenge from a public school teacher, Liz Weaver. This race is the first since Grossmont adapted district elections, with Woods representing El Cajon. Two other trustees, Robert Shield and Jim Kelly, are running unopposed. And finally, on our pre-election day roundup of local races, thieves in the Cajon Valley School District race have sunk to a new low, stealing not signs, but American flags attached to campaign signs for candidate Jill Barto, including one large flag that must have required hoisting a ladder for the heist. Also on today's show, we'll have some information for you about a school bond measure in the Mountain Empire School District here in rural East County. From Public News Service, we'll have national news about President Trump wanting to eliminate birthright citizenship for immigrants, an action that legal scholars say is unconstitutional. And what many of you may not know is that Congressman Duncan Hunter has previously supported a measure to do just that. On Sounds of History, we'll take you up in a vintage World War II aircraft at Gillespie Field with two World War II veteran pilots and prisoners of war. Hear about the latest San Diego Press Club Awards, won by members of our own East County Magazine reporting team. And finally, with Thanksgiving coming up soon, as we'll have some holiday turkey safety tips for you on today's show. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we are continuing our coverage of the Santee City Council race, and my next special guest is Zach Giannino. He is one of three candidates running for an open seat in District 3. He works as a liaison for the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District, working with high school students. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam, for having me.
So tell us what made you decide to run for the Santee City Council.
Okay, so how much time do you have? Well, there's a lot of things, I think, that have pushed me to run. So I've been following Santee politics since I was 17. And so I've kind of am an oddball out, focusing on things that my peers didn't really care about, which is okay because, you know, yeah. someone has to do it, right?
Well, good for you. Politics is important.
So, you know, I haven't gone to countless meetings. I've kind of caught on a trend and a pattern, if you will, that really is disheartening as a citizen of the city. And that basically is developers kind of having their way here in Santee. And it seems that the communities are put on the back burner when it comes to how these developments are made. And so I think it's time to start putting the people first in that process.
So where do you stand on something like Finita Ranch?
So Finita Ranch is an issue that has been circulating Santee for decades. I'm very well aware of that, and there's a huge saga surrounding it. Now, the proposal we currently have had presented to the public, which I've attended several of their presentations, to me just seems like there are enough red flags for anyone looking at the project to think otherwise. There are fire hazards, there are water concerns on how we're going to get water up there. There are, you know, and when we have these developments, that means SDG&E is going to have to hike those bills. And we were just gouged really hard this past season. So yeah. That's another thing I think people are worried about.
Yeah. Traffic is another one, too. How would you address the traffic gridlock situation that seems to be increasing in Santee? That seems to be the number one complaint that we're hearing about from voters out there.
Yeah. So traffic. So there's a bunch of angles I think we can attack this traffic issue. I know the mayor has initiated a 52 coalition. And, you know, when I first started my candidacy, I started speaking about how this is a multi-city issue. This is not Santee issue. And we've got SANDAG statistics to prove that this is a regional issue.
True.
So the 52 coalition is a great way of starting this discussion in the region. I think our software, having looked more into the way the city functions, our software could be updated. I know we have software of our lights and our traffic synchronizing methods that are in place, but they're not up to par with what we really have available to us, which is quicker response times and, you know, even speaking and communicating with city services. Because believe it or not, if there's an issue that happens in the city and a fire truck needs to make a route, that can hold up an entire route of traffic. Whereas if we have smart technology in our traffic lights, we can actually have those services speak to the traffic lights, and the traffic lights will carve the path out throughout the entire city for those services to get through. So that can be a way of, you know, amplifying how our city lights work. Yes. That's just one way.
Okay. Let's talk about the Citizens Initiative. Mm. There was a ballot initiative, as background listeners, that got enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. And what it would do is give the voters a say-so on any project that would go beyond what the general plan allows, denser developments, big housing projects, for mm-hmm. example. The city council chose not to put that on the ballot for 2 years and to spend money, taxpayer money, to study that instead. Mm-hmm. Zach, what is your opinion about the initiative itself and about the council's decision?
So the initiative itself, I was not just a supporter. I signed it, supported it, and circulated it. So I went door to door and spoke to citizens about the initiative. And basically, I didn't need to speak long to those residents as much as I would, because they already understood that there is something happening in Santee where the people are not having the final say on these things. And, you know, the petition is very, you know, Santee's very unique. You know, we've got a city that enjoys our quality of life, enjoys the open space, the hills, the right. beautiful hawks, you know, everything that makes Santee.
Yeah, beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. So a lot of that has to do with making sure that we don't get overrun by sprawl development and have all of our beautiful hills stacked with houses.
Yeah. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is there is a housing crisis, an affordable housing crisis, the state mandate's coming down, and also the city is facing what some might call a revenue crisis. At least they're facing a deficit coming up. So how would you balance those issues to resolve the budget situation if you don't build all the houses everywhere like some people want to do?
Absolutely. So the common theme of thinking is that if we just keep building homes, we're going to get ourselves out of the deficit. Well, the fact of the matter is that city services catch up. And those city services outweigh what little spurt to our budget we may have in the short term. So one of the ways we can actually mitigate this is that, you know, the San Diego Union-Tribune actually did an article explaining about the housing crisis. Now, the housing crisis is being used to justify all of this development. However, if you look at the deadlines the state are providing, we can actually build 166 units a year to meet those housing crisis deadlines by the state. Mm-hmm. So I think people need to put in perspective that you go to two of our city council meetings today and we're already discussing 240 units. So we can slow down the way these developments are being pushed, and that itself will still meet the crisis deadline. So we've got time to pace ourselves. We've been pacing ourselves in the past, and businesses have been running here. So it's not that we need to just keep building homes and people are going to come. That's not...
What about turning around the city's finances, either by bringing in more revenues or cutting expenses?
So what we first need to stop doing is we need to stop turning our commercial parcels into residential parcels. I think that that should be first and foremost. Second, I think we need to continue the rallying behind our entertainment district. We have huge plans coming down the pike of the movie theater. We just finalized a lot of the negotiations with that, so that's being pushed forward.
Yeah.
We've got community center being discussed in that area. We've got Carl Strauss that wants to have a headquarters in that area, which is going to bring so much positive publicity to our area.
Yeah, the major brewery.
Huge brewery. And I'm pretty sure it's their headquarters as well, which they want to make a multi-purpose facility. So, I mean, we've got a lot of companies that are urging to be in Santee. So that demand is already there. We just have to make sure the environment is inviting to these companies. And
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Who are your major endorsements from, Zach?
So one of the endorsements I have not spent time seeking endorsements.
You're not allied with either of the political parties.
Yes, I am an independent. I'm a no party preference, nonpartisan candidate because truly to myself, the issues supersede political parties. And a lot of my support comes from Republicans. A lot of my support comes from Democrats. A lot of my support comes from people that don't want to be either of those parties. So that, you know, plays a huge role in the support.
Who are your most important endorsements in the race?
So, like I was saying, I have not sought endorsements, but one of the ones that I am actually very proud of is the endorsement by Councilman Houlihan, Stephen Houlihan. He has been someone that has put himself right in the target of, you know, where the people's sentiment is. You know, a lot of the times we're getting 4-1 on development votes because Stephen hears, Mr. Houlihan hears 30 people come out from that residential area and talk about how they don't like what's going on. And, you know, the council sometimes seems to not really pay attention to that, except Stephen. And Stephen votes based on what the people are saying. So that's something that I appreciate as a representative.
Yeah, his was really quite an upset victory a couple of years ago when he got on there. He beat out two pro-development candidates with a lot of developer money in their races. And he'd been the guy that headed up to stop the Santee Power Plant initiative successfully. And
Exactly. And Stephen walked that same line that, you know, I'm not a political party. I'm about putting the neighborhoods first and putting, you know, that process in the hands of the people, not just to the highest bidder.
Yeah. Zach, you are the youngest candidate in the race. I wonder if you'd like to address what experience you have that you would like the voters to know about that you think would help qualify you for this job.
Santee has there's a term that gets utilized and thrown around a lot, which is the good old boys club, or you call it the good old boys and girls club. And one of the things I think a lot of excitement around my candidacy is a break to that. And what that means is that, you know, I don't have conflicts of interest that would inhibit me from having a voice on a lot of our issues. So, yeah, I'm younger, but the thing is that I put myself at a very early age into very big leadership positions. I was vice president of a 501c3, which was an incorporated student government, which means we had to follow Brown Act and Robert's Rules. So that gave me the experience of governance and running a board. I was also elected and swore an oath as a student trustee for 2 years on the district governing board, where I spoke to every level of legislative official that there was on, you know, veteran services to helping our homeless students. So those experiences gave me not just a familiarity with the process, but hands-on interactions with legislators. That puts me in a confident perspective to negotiate on behalf of Santee.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for addressing that question. What else would you like our listeners to know, Zach, about you and your candidacy or the issues facing Santee?
Well, I think overall, Santee, we're at a really huge self-realization for the city. And I think that is by us going from a town to a city culture. And in order to keep our community, we need to make sure our city council meetings are live streamed. I know there are some third parties that are trying to do that, but I don't know if that's good enough. I think the city itself should mandate its ability to stream our meetings so that our seniors can see what's going on in Santee. So that, you know, people hear how the council is conducting themselves, because a lot of the times no one sees those kinds of interactions. Another thing I think is important is we need to challenge companies like SDG&E. We need to put in, you know, we need to let them know that we're looking for alternatives and that your monopoly over us is short-lived. It will be short-lived.
Yeah, I know in your questionnaire that we sent to all the candidates, mm-hmm. you were the only one who mentioned calling for a community choice aggregate, meaning basically an alternative to SDG&E.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I know this idea was brought to the council many years ago and it was rejected basically by stating we weren't ready for such changes or anything, but we've had a bit of a change of the attitude from some current council members and the people of Santee. Like I said, after getting hit with the gouging prices we were hit with, I think people are open to looking at other ways we can sustain ourselves in the long run.
So it would be following in the steps of the city of San Diego, which the mayor has just said they're going to be doing this too.
I think that's a perfect example. They were also someone, a group that decided, you know, it's time to make a public stance on something that we've really known for a while is the direction we need to be going in. Finally, we're getting some political will to do that. And I just want to continue that process at the Santee city level.
Very good. Zach, where else can people get information about you and your candidacy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you can reach me at my website is www.electzachgiannino.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram, which is just at Zach Giannino. And I'm also all over Facebook. So I try to keep that social media as a double-edged sword, but I think it's an opportunity to engage with my constituents.
Very good. And listeners, you can also go on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in the politics section. We have questionnaires that were answered by all seven candidates in all three races in Santee, as well as some information on a couple of the candidate forums they had out there. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Zach Giannino, a candidate for Santee Council District 3. Zach, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we are continuing our series of interviews with candidates running for the Santee City Council, and my very special guest today is Laura Koval. Laura is the Director of Parks and Recreation for Santee Lakes, and she is running for the Council District 3 seat. There are three candidates. It's an open seat, so very important. There's definitely going to be a new face. The other two candidates are Zach Giannino and Linda Merkel, who will be on the show later today. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
So tell us, what made you decide to run for the Santee City Council?
Well, I've lived in Santee for 26 years, actually a resident of District 3 the whole entire time. And I've been attending City Council meetings. I was there when the city was forced to go to District elections, and I learned about the budget deficit that the city's facing, and I have 30 years of executive experience, leadership, and I thought, you know, why not me? I live in the district. I can help. This is my area of expertise, and I'd like to help the city that I've raised my family in, and East County is my home, and I just really felt the need to help.
Very good. What are your ideas for turning that deficit around and either increasing revenues or cutting costs?
I'm more about increasing revenues. And when I say that, I don't mean increasing taxes. And I've learned through running for office that that is a code word for raising taxes, but I never thought of that. In my young 20s, I was the director of the Santee Boys and Girls Club. And at that time, it was a trailer at Santana High School, so obviously very limited in space, but we had revenue goals. And I learned at an early age that regardless of what you have in front of you, there are ways to increase revenue if you're creative. So, for instance, at the Boys and Girls Club, I created the largest basketball league in all of East County by creating relationships with the local high schools and using their gyms, and we had quadruple enrollment. But the bulk of my career was with the San Diego Padres. I worked for them for over 25 years.
Really?
Yes, and I was in charge of the largest revenue center for the organization. I was responsible for renewal revenue year after year. Ticketing revenue as well, but season ticket holder renewals, which was quite a challenge when you don't have the best product on the field.
No, exactly.
How do you get creative getting season ticket holders to come back year after year after year? And I was successful at that.
How does that translate into a city? Obviously, you did a great job there, but we don't have season ticket holders for a city. Where would the money come from?
So season ticket holders, I look at everything as they're all customers. So the residents of Santee are customers, and what customers bring in revenue to the city. There's not a lot of room to grow. So we're not looking at housing developments and things like that. We need to reinvest in our local community. It's a idea that is used on the East Coast called economic gardening, where there's limited space to live and grow, so you reinvest in the businesses and the community that you have there. And to do that, you have to make government more efficient. It can't be a process when you're trying to improve your business and bring new revenue into the city that you're faced with roadblocks and time delays. That's what does happen right now in Santee, and that's what I would like to fix.
Okay. Speaking of fixing, one of the big problems that the voters are telling us about in Santee is the traffic gridlock situation. And of course, that also ties in with development to a point. What are your ideas for improving the traffic gridlock?
I've been involved with the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce for many, many years. And this is a regional problem. Traffic, you know, we all live in East County and work either downtown like I did for a long time or in the northern part of the county. What is it? 72% of the traffic commutes out and then commutes back. So I am an investor and an active member of the Highway 52 Coalition, which I think is a unique idea. It's the mayor's initiative. We've hired a lobbyist to work at the federal level for a fix to the traffic on the 52.
Very interesting.
The other thing that I've learned by going to SANDAG meetings the last few years is that we're not a priority. So,
yeah, that seems to have only gotten worse since they revamped everything over there and they put the voting power essentially into the hands of the city of San Diego and Chula Vista and took it away from all the East County cities, basically.
100% correct. And I actually attended the SANDAG meeting they had in La Mesa. My weeks are running together through this campaigning, but I think it was last week.
Yeah, about transportation.
Yes, and I spoke up. I was very disappointed in the three options that they offered. None of them are solutions. One of them they said was a solution to traffic, but their solution was to charge everybody for parking. So if you drive to work, now you're going to pay parking, and that's how they're going to fix it. To me, that's not solving the problem,
right.
And it's not keeping up with... I offered some solutions at the meeting, actually, and they said they were good solutions, good ideas. We'll see.
Let's hope maybe they listen.
I think they did listen, and I was at least encouraged by that. It's going to take a regional approach to this and not just Santee residents.
Now, that said, some people are concerned that while the traffic certainly is regional, if Santee builds a lot of housing developments that are proposed, it obviously would make the traffic situation worse, too, although it would bring in revenue, on the other hand, and, you know, provide places for people to live. So what are your views on Finito Ranch, number one? And number two, what are your views on the Citizens Initiative? It had enough signatures to get on the ballot, but the council voted to postpone it a couple of years and study it, and it would give the citizens a vote on any project that would require upzoning from the general plan. In other words, more development than the general plan.
I think that's the biggest misconception about me in the public right now is feelings on Finito Ranch. And I want the voters to have a voice on Finito Ranch. And I don't know if you know this, but the district race for District 3 is only a two-year term. And the voters will be voting on projects like Finita Ranch, but I think that's the big hot button. That's the one that seems to...
So you think that the council shouldn't try to push it through and approve it?
Oh, no. They let the voters decide in 2020 for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As far as the initiative that you talked about, I was at the city council meeting when the language was put up and you know, it all happened so fast. I was like, oh, I want to read this report. And then when I read the report, it didn't address... It talked about residential housing, and it didn't talk about much else but that. And I was disappointed in the report.
So you think it should have included commercial development as well?
It should have had, exactly, because there is language in the plan that now on every project that the city is approving, they're putting new language in all of their approvals, whether the project is upzoned or not, that talks about intensity of use.
Interesting.
For instance, it's a car wash and a Subway shop down in District 3, and they didn't upzone their property or anything like that. But the approval through City Council had language in there about intensity of use, and I thought, well, it is strange to me now that they're including a disclaimer almost. Mm-hmm. And maybe more people are going to go to that business, and that's good. But why is this language in there now? What is it that is triggering?
Yeah, that's
this language.
Very curious.
So we'll figure that out.
Yeah, I guess so. Who are your major endorsements in your campaign, Laura?
Well, I did mention the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, but the big endorsements, I believe, are the Deputy Sheriff's Association mm-hmm. and the Santee Firefighters. The mayor has endorsed me, and his name is John Minto. Mm-hmm. And
the County Republican Party?
Yes, they have endorsed me as well. Mm-hmm. And there's just a list of, you know, family, friends, business professionals, anywhere. I think the most interesting one is Bruce Bochy, which people might think, well, that's strange. But we did develop a very close business relationship because when he was the manager of the Padres, I was a manager of a big department that was responsible for revenue. He was actually a mentor to me in business.
Interesting. Well, that makes sense. Laura, I'm going to let you have the final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know about you and your candidacy for the Santee City Council District 3?
I think I would like people to know that I'm a mom who cares. I live in Santee. I had no ambitions through a 30-year career of being in politics, but I felt the need to help when I saw what the city is facing, the challenges that we're facing. I feel very confident in my ability to help with the budget and to help Santee thrive. I've been involved in this community for decades, you know, but not in the forefront. I just do stuff because I care so much. And so this is me putting myself out there, and I hope it comes across that I want the best for Santee. I will work very hard for Santee, and I'm really excited to help the city thrive and frankly survive this, you know, our financial future that's before us.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. We are continuing our coverage in the Santee City Council races today, and my next special guest is Linda Markall. She is one of three candidates running for the District 3 open seat on the Santee City Council. She is retired, and she spent her career as first a photographer and later a manager, managing everything from a taxi cab company to medical offices. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Why did you decide to run for the Santee City Council?
I am running for City Council. I'm picking up where my mother left off. Her name was Mildred Markell. She formed a small group in 1968 that decided they wanted to incorporate and become a city. That small group had ventured out to Scottsdale, Arizona, and they saw their vision for our city of Santee. So I figure I'm just going to be following in her footsteps.
You certainly bring a lot of history. You've lived in this city for many, many, many years and seen a lot of changes, I would imagine.
Yes, I have. I was born and raised in Santee. We had a little house on Mission Gorge Road. It was a two-bedroom, small. And Mission Gorge, believe it or not, I don't know if people remember this, there used to be a 4-foot ditch all along Mission Gorge Road. And every property had a little bridge that they had to cross. And when it rained, the water would go over the bridge and it would make it fun for us to watch who didn't make the bridge. So my parents realized that it was very important to widen Mission Gorge Road. And they were the family that first gave property to do this for Santee.
Very interesting. That's quite a history. One of the big issues that we're hearing today that voters are concerned about is development, or what some consider to be overdevelopment. There certainly are some problems out there with traffic gridlock on Highway 52 in particular and some of the city streets. Where do you stand on the whole development issue, and what do you view as the best ways to address the traffic gridlock problem?
I believe we need smart development. And we have to be careful, because once something develops, we can't take it back.
True.
And with the traffic, people in the 70s remember Mission Gorge used to back all the way up into Grantville. So we've had traffic for a lot of years. Now we have these freeways in, and a lot of this traffic isn't even coming from our city. It's coming from the adjacent cities of people coming to and from work.
Bonita Ranch is a major project that would bring almost 3,000 homes to the city of Santee. It's certainly been on the burner for years and years and years. What are your views about that project or others of that scale?
Bonita Ranch has been on the books for almost 30 years. I was not a great fan of Bonita Ranch. I haven't yet seen anything that I feel is acceptable to put in. And if you think about it, 30 years ago, we did not have firestorms. We didn't have fire tornadoes. Now we have that. So we really have to develop smart in putting people's lives at risk by trying to put that size of a development in with the 52 the way it is. If there is a fire, nobody will be able to escape.
Very good point. You know, no other candidate has mentioned that, but you're right. Certainly during the Cedar Fire and some of these big fires, we've seen serious traffic issues coming out of some of the areas like Ramona, even on Interstate 8 when it got all backed up, and it came awfully close to an even worse catastrophe out there with some of the gridlock. So that's an important consideration. A related issue is the ballot initiative that citizens have been trying to get on the ballot. They did qualify it with enough signatures, but the city council voted to fund a study for 2 years before it can go on the ballot. And what that initiative would do, listeners, is it would give the citizens a vote on any project that exceeds what's allowed in the general plan. So you couldn't build something that allowed more houses than the general plan does without the voters having a say-so. What are your views on the initiative itself and on the council's action?
Well, the initiative itself, I believe, should have been written more clear. I don't feel it was clear enough. And I was in favor of putting it on the ballot. The problem was that it didn't give the council enough time to do an impact study before placing it on November's ballot, which did force them to have to do the study. Mm-hmm. The good of the study was it came out that our industry is lacking, which I've known for years. It's fragmented. And I had proposed that we put the industry where Bonita Ranch was supposed to go.
Oh, what an interesting idea.
And have a wonderful industry park where we could you know, entertain something like Qualcomm, Google, or other internet company base.
So bring in high-tech businesses that would also provide local jobs, which, of course, would help cut down on some of that gridlock if people are not commuting out of the area.
Yes, and put the residents in the zoning that is zoned right now as industry, build homes there where they'll be safe inside of Santee.
Another issue is the budget right now. The city is facing a fiscal deficit in its budget. What steps would you take to improve the economy of Santee and either increase revenues or decrease expenses?
Well, we're going to have to cut back a lot. With an $800,000 deficit hitting in 2019,
ouch.
This is a very serious problem for our city. And I would really be sad to see it unincorporate due to this. I feel that we really have to focus on our commercial property. We need to rethink some zoning since situations have changed like the fires. And the general plan, yes, it was good in its day, but it's not up to date with the current climate change and the current issues that our city has been facing.
You mentioned unincorporation, which would be, I guess, the worst case scenario that could happen if they didn't get the budget under control. That's already being talked about in Lemon Grove, although they have a much smaller budget. You mentioned to me before we went on the air that you remember back before Santee was incorporated and maybe not so fondly. Can you share that with our listeners?
Yes. Santee, when it was unincorporated, was really hard to be the stepchild of San Diego. We were the Cinderella. And my parents were frustrated. They went to so many meetings. They formed their group. It wasn't a good situation for Santee when it was unincorporated because there was no plan. Things weren't done right.
We certainly see today, you don't need to look any farther than Lakeside and the controversy over the sand mine that might go in out there, despite the fact that hundreds of people have come out against it and virtually nobody in favor of it, except for the sand miner, of course, or, say, the giant wind turbines in Boulevard or paramilitary training camps, to see some of the really unusual projects that have been sort of foisted on the rural areas and the unincorporated areas. So I think it's a good word of caution to be sort of careful about what you wish for when people talk about unincorporation. You really do lose the power to make your own decisions as a city when something like that happens.
Oh, yes, it would be tragic for Santee to lose that. We would not have a voice in what San Diego does, and we would have no control.
Who are your most important endorsements?
I only have one endorsement, and that's with the Democratic Party.
Well, that's a big one. It means you'll be on all their mailers. Linda, I'm going to give you the final say today. And listeners, if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Linda Markall, who is one of the three candidates on the ballot running for the Santee District 3 race, along with Zach Giannino and Laura Caval, who are also on the show. And we're very pleased, actually, that all seven candidates in all three seats did do written questionnaires with us that you can find on our site at eastcountymagazine.org in the politics section, where we also have information about the candidate forums, as well as we'll be posting interviews with the six of the seven who agreed to come on and be interviewed on this show. So I want to give you the last word today, Linda. What else would you like our listeners to know about you and your candidacy or the issues in Santee?
I feel this is a very crucial election for the city of Santee. With this deficit going to hit us, I feel that experience will matter a lot. And I feel that this city council isn't the demonized as they have been. I have seen so much worse. And people that realize and have lived here know that city council was not like it is now. And they're struggling to try to mend what has occurred in our past council. So I really want the citizens to get out and vote smart And also our seniors. I would love to see a senior center, because now that I'm close to my senior age, that would be a real plus to have in the city of Santee.
That's a very good idea. It's certainly important to take care of our seniors. Linda, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Residents in the Mountain Empire Unified School District will be voting on Measure JJ, a $15 million bond to renovate aging facilities at 8 schools in rural East San Diego County. There are over 1,700 students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade in the huge district, which measures over 1,600 square miles. If 55% of the voters approve the measure, it will have a tax assessment of $37 a year for every $100,000 of assessed property value. Superintendent Kathy Granger says most of our schools are over 40 years old and have never been renovated. She adds that many need roofing, updated plumbing and electrical systems, heating and ventilation to improve school safety and security for the children. In addition, all of the schools must meet current American Disability Act standards to provide safe access for students, parents, teachers, and visitors. The schools include Mountain Empire High School, Camp Lockett and Pine Valley Middle Schools, and the Campo, Descanso, Potrero, and Clover Flat Elementary Schools. The oldest structure, Descanso's main building, was built way back in 1935 and has never been modernized. Patrick Keeley, principal of Mountain Empire High School and Measure JJ campaign chair, says science labs were built back in the 1970s and haven't been updated since he was a student there in the 80s. This puts district students at a disadvantage, he says, compared to those in urban areas of San Diego with modern lab facilities. Keeley sees the measure as an investment in the area's children and its communities. The San Diego County Taxpayers Association has endorsed Measure JJ, which requires a community oversight board to be sure that the funds will be used only for the facilities. No formal argument against the bond measure was submitted to the county's voter guide. Granger says the bond measure has strong support among many parents, staff, and volunteers, adding, "In the end, it's all about the kids." Reporting for East County Magazine, on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery.
Civil rights groups are dismissing President Donald Trump's plan to end birthright citizenship, calling it an unconstitutional election week stunt to appeal to his base. Trump said in an interview Monday that he's planning an executive order revoking the right to automatic citizenship for people born on American soil and will reserve it only for babies with at least one parent who is a citizen. Tom Javits with the Center for American Progress Action Fund says birthright citizenship is spelled out in the Constitution's 14th Amendment and cannot be erased single-handedly by the president.
This test balloon from the president is a lead balloon. It's got no constitutional ground on which to stand, and courts will not uphold whatever executive order the president issues that's designed to limit the reach of the citizenship clause, the 14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment was put in place after the Civil War to protect former slaves and their children and has been open to different interpretations over the years. President Trump said on Monday that it's ridiculous for someone to have citizenship solely because they're born in the U.S., but any such executive order would provoke litigation because the Constitution can only be changed by a two-thirds majority in Congress or passage by two-thirds of state legislatures. Javits says the president's proposal, along with the militarization of the border and the stream of insulting tweets directed at immigrants, are part of what he calls an extremist policy agenda.
And under this administration, we've seen a dramatic decrease in the grant of visas to people from Muslim-majority countries. We've seen a dramatic decrease in foreign students, a dramatic decrease in the admission of refugees. So this administration is having a full frontal assault, not just on the issue of illegal immigration, but on all immigrants into this country.
According to the American Immigration Council, California is home to more immigrants than any other state. More than a quarter of California residents are immigrants, while nearly one in four is a native-born U.S. citizen with at least one immigrant parent. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now here in San Diego, Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter, who's up for re-election on Tuesday, supported a Birthright Citizenship Act bill similar to what Trump proposes. bill backed by Hunter would have limited birthright citizenship only to children of an American citizen, a member of the military, or a legal permanent resident. That bill failed to win passage, but now President Trump seeks to strip immigrant children of their citizenship by executive order. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History.
They call them the greatest generation, and on October 1st, World War II veteran pilots reminisced about their combat flight experiences aboard a B-17 Warbird aptly named Sentimental Journey. This peacetime flight out of El Cajon's Gillespie Field was offered by the Arizona Memorial Museum's staff and flight crew to local members of the press and public, and our reporter, Rebecca Jeffress Williamson, was on board. 95-year-old Bill Milton recalls, "I was on my 11th mission when I got shot down on a strafing run in Greece. I was coming in low to see if I could hit as many airplanes and buildings as possible, trying to hinder their ability to operate off their airfield." Milton was captured and became a prisoner of war, or POW. He was transferred from Greece to Stalagluft III in Germany, where he was imprisoned for 7 months. "Food was scarce," he recalls. "You are living in conditions where you are guarded all the time," continued Milton. Then General Patton reached the area with Allied troops, and Milton was rescued in April 1945. Fellow World War II pilot Ed Davidson, now 95, was a pilot on a B-17 when he was 19 years old. He recalls, "Everything happened in a couple of seconds. We were flying very low to the ground. Then ground fire took out my left engine." He too became a POW when he was shot down over occupied France on his 7th mission in January 1944. "The next day we went through Paris and then to Frankfurt, then to Barth," says Davison, who spent 16 months in Stalagluft I. "I spent my 21st birthday there," he recalls. "In April we started hearing the guns, so by May 1st, 1945, the Russians liberated us. They put 30 POWs on each B-17 and flew them to Allied military camps. We were at Camp Lucky Strike," he says, adding that each of the camps were named for cigarette brands. Debbie English is the adjutant and membership officer for Air Group 1, based out of Gillespie Field. She and her husband, Doug, were both on hand to greet the crew of the Sentimental Journey. She says they worked for 6 months to get the Arizona Commemorative Air Force Museum crew here, along with the Sentimental Journey B-17. Air Group 1 was formed as the San Diego Squadron of CAF in 1981. They were renamed Air Group 1 2 years later. They have a hangar and a World War II museum with a mission to keep history alive by restoring World War II aircraft, providing memorial flyovers at events, and a presence at local air shows. The organization brought the Sentimental Journey to the airport and offered rides for a fee in the rare B-17G Warbird, one of only 8 of this model left in the entire world. During the 25-minute air tour over East County, the roar of the engine, images of the propeller and the sky beyond induced an adrenaline rush and a sense of what it must have been like riding in this aircraft during wartime. But on this flight, passengers didn't have to fear being shot down by enemy aircraft or taken prisoner. As the Sentimental Journey landed, veteran Bill Milton called it a beautiful flight. If you would like to take a ride aboard the Sentimental Journey, the vintage airplane will be in Palm Springs until October 14th and in Bakersfield until October 21st. For more information or to purchase a ride, you can visit flyinglegendstour.com. To find out about future flight opportunities or to support Air Group 1, you can visit the Air Group 1 website at ag1caf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine's Sounds of History series, this is John Fistier.
three of our East County Magazine reporters received honors in San Diego Press Club's 2018 Awards of Excellence presented this week, bringing our total to 112 journalism awards as we celebrate our 10th anniversary. Paul Cruz, contributing editor, won first place for business writing for his article called Plans for El Cajon Cremation Facility Going Up in Smoke. Jonathan Goetz won a first-place travel writing award for his in-depth reviews of lodging destinations for stargazing travelers in Borrego Springs. Paul Cruz and I, Miriam Raftery, shared a political reporting award for our article titled Colosio Gets Slapped, Countersuit Against Accusers Thrown Out by San Diego Judge. That judge found El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio's countersuit to be a slap suit. That's an illegal action meant to intimidate people from exercising constitutional rights of free speech and seeking redress of grievances in court. Colosio has bashed media outlets reporting on his legal troubles as fake news. So thank you, San Diego Press Club, for affirming the value of our real news reporting in the public interest.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
When most of us think about Thanksgiving, images of turkey, stuffing, and time spent with loved ones typically comes to mind, not fire hazards. However, an increased risk of fire is, in fact, a reality of Thanksgiving, reminds Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna. According to the National Fire Protection Association, three times as many home-cooked fires occur on Thanksgiving as on a typical day. Unattended cooking is the leading cause of home-cooking fires. So here are the National Fire Protection Association's top five tips for cooking with fire safety in mind on Thanksgiving and beyond. Stay in the kitchen while you're cooking and keep a close eye on what you fry. Always stay in the kitchen while frying, grilling, or broiling food. If you do have to leave the kitchen for even a short period of time, turn off the stove. Regularly check on food that's simmering, baking, or roasting, and use a timer to remind you when it's done. Keep things that can catch fire, such as oven mitts, wooden utensils, food packaging, towels, and curtains, away from your cooking area. Be alert when cooking. If you're asleep, don't use the stove or the stovetop. If you do have a small grease cooking fire on the stovetop and decide to fight the fire, smother the flames by sliding a lid over the pan and turning off the burner. Leave the pan covered until it is completely cooled. For an oven fire, turn off the heat and keep the door closed. If you're cooking a turkey using a disposable aluminum pan, consider doubling up and using two pans to avoid a puncture, since dripping turkey juices, while delicious, can also cause an oven fire. Stay safe and have a happy Thanksgiving. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's backcountry.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Goetz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.